On January 23, 2004, WPFW was granted a license by the Federal Communications Commission to serve the public interest as a public trustee until October 1, 2011. Our license will expire on October 1, 2011. We have filed an application for license renewal with the FCC. A copy of this application is available for public inspection during our regular business hours. It contains information concerning this station's performance during the last 7 years. Individuals who wish to advise the FCC of facts relating to our renewal application and to whether this station has operated in the public interest should file comments and petitions with the Commission by September 1, 2011. Further information concerning the Commission's broadcast license renewal process is available at 2390 Champlain Street Northwest, 2nd floor, Washington, D.C., or may be obtained from the FCC, Washington, D.C., 20554.
WPFW, Washington.
Se viene el estallido de mi guitarra, de tu gobierno también. Se viene el estallido, se viene el estallido de mi guitarra, de tu gobierno también. Si tienes alguna duda, que te agarrará. Esto no es una dictadura, se viene el estallido, se viene el estallido, de mi guitarra, de tu gobierno también. Se viene el estallido, se viene el estallido.
Good evening, buenas noches a todo mi gente aquí in Washington, D.C. This is Oscar Fernandez, and you're listening to Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, El Distrito de Colombia, here on this Wednesday, August 3rd, 2011. Again, this is Oscar Fernandez, and for most of the hour this evening, we're going to focus this evening on the University of Maryland, focusing on some of the issues in regards to workers' rights and worker abuses that have been taking place for some time at the University of Maryland. Again, this is Oscar Fernandez along with Janet Hernandez. And Janet, ¿cómo estás?
Muy bien. Buenas noches a toda la gente que nos escuchan. Good evening to all of the people who are listening to you. We're once again bringing you a great show today. And to start, we have a couple of news from around the world. Today, more than 50 members of a child pornography ring who engage in what authorities describe as horrific and unspeakable crimes have been arrested for sexually exploiting children from 12 years old to as young as infants. Top federal law enforcement officials say agents busted the global online pornography ring following an intense international investigation that began in 2009. The ring, based here in the United States, reached across 5 continents and 14 countries. LA Times reports that the Justice Department filed a challenge to Alabama's tough anti-illegal immigration law on Monday, arguing that the Constitution prohibits state and local governments from creating a national patchwork of immigration policies. The suit filed in Alabama's Northern District marks the second time the Obama administration has sought to block a state immigration reform law. Last year, the Justice Department filed a similar challenge to Arizona's controversial SB 1070. And reporting from the United Nations, 3 more regions of Somalia have now been struck by famine, including the capital, Mogadishu. Mogadishu, the Afuja Corridor, and the Shabelle regions west of the capital are the latest that have slipped into famine, the UN reports. And lastly, Syrian troops and tanks have reportedly advanced deep into the central city of Hama to put an end to weeks of anti-government protest. Residents said tanks had reached a C-square in the city center with a focus of mass rallies against President Bashar al-Assad. There are reports of severe destruction and piles of bodies in the city. This is according to the BBC. Those are our news for today, Oscar.
Whew. Thank you very much, Jeanette. For the hour this evening, recently a number of ongoing labor violations have come into the spotlight as University of Maryland workers are increasingly coming forward with reports of serious management abuse from sexual assault to racial harassment. So with us in the studio this evening are several people who are organizing workers to get involved in regards to this situation. We have with us Solomon Commission. Oh, I'm saying that right. The president of the Black Faculty and Staff Association, who is also a professor of African American Studies, and the assistant director of student involvement and public relations at the Niumburu Cultural Center, which is also in College Park, Maryland. We also have with us Jack Eisen. Hope I'm saying that right as well. Undergraduate student at the University of Maryland as well, and a member of the student group Feminism Without Borders. We have also Andrea Zamudio, who is also an alumni of the University of Maryland College Park, who's been helping to organize some of the workers in regards to making their grievance to the University of Maryland. And we also have with us Nettie Alfaro, a housekeeper who's currently working at the University of Maryland College Park campus, who will give us her testimonial as well as to some of her experience in regards to worker abuse. So let's begin with the basics. Professor Solomon, what brought up this issue of workers' rights at the University of Maryland?
Well, I want to first and foremost thank the Latino Media Collective for having us on this show today. It's really important because it's by far been ignored by too many corporate media outlets, and so I really thank WPFW and the Latino Media Collective for having us on. This issue has been going on the campus of the University of Maryland for quite some time, but it came to my attention when my administration took office. That's the Black Faculty and Staff Association's incoming administration last October, and we had on our agenda that we wanted to present the new president with some points that we wanted him to address, President Wallace Lowe. And one of those was we wanted to see, better working conditions for non-exempt staff on the campus of University of Maryland. At that time, we had no idea how egregious and how widespread this issue was. As we started to administer an in-house, when I say in-house, within the University of Maryland survey of workplace quality of life conditions, I started to have more and more people coming into my office. And at the time, it was mostly Black women, and then followed by Latino women, with allegations and claims of sexual abuse, racial discrimination. And then we had men, black men, with allegations of racial discrimination, being called boy, being called the N-word. And it just started to it continued to pick up. And so this goes all the way back to November till where we are today. And it's been a snowball effect. What we found out is that, and I'll end on this, I'll say, it seemed like things were just, to the layperson outside of the University of Maryland, it might seem as if these things just started to just kind of trickle down here and there. But this was based on the fact that we had a growing coalition with students and with workers and the Black Faculty and Staff Association, the local AFSCME 1072 union, working together. And the more support workers felt like they had, the more they started to come out of the woodwork and address these issues at the subsequent forums that we had. And unfortunately, and I end on this, unfortunately, a lot of the workers, a lot of Latina women, a lot of the black women who have come forward, and a lot of and quite frankly, some of the men who have come forth with allegations have been retaliated against numerous times by their supervisors. And so that's where we are today. But this stems back to last fall, but it's been going on for, I would say, at least a couple decades.
Wow. Jack Eisen, can you add a little bit more detail to what he just brought up? And, when did you also become first aware of this situation?
Well, other students had been working on this a little before me, but I first found out about it at the second forum that the Black Faculty and Staff Association hosted. So at that forum, I came and Basically, a lot of people were coming forward and talking about their experiences, talking about what they thought should happen, and basically it's sort of a community meeting together and saying, like, look, this is what's happening, what should we do? And when I got there, I mean, these issues that people are raising, these aren't something that you can casually ignore. Like, people are being abused on our campus, people are being sexually assaulted, people are being, racially harassed. And so as a student, I feel like I have a responsibility to make sure that my school is reproducing the ideals that my school is telling me to show. Like, they want me to be a good citizen, to be a liberal, to be a person of the world, and yet at the same time these things are happening on our campus. And so I got involved because I think that something needs to change, that the administration needs to take tangible action, and that these abuses need to end because they've been happening for far too long. And so a lot of students are getting involved. We're reaching out. More and more people are coming, and so I think there's a lot of potential for students to really support workers in this issue.
Let's provide a timeline of what your organizing efforts have been from the time you began organizing to now. Where ultimately, where do things stand now?
Right. Do you want me to give you like an actual overview of the chronological timeline? Well, we met with, and this is the Black Faculty and Staff Association's executive board, myself and members of the executive board on down. We met with the new president of University of Maryland, Dr. Wallace Lowe, back in November 23rd, 2010, and that's when we presented him with our agenda. And our agenda had listed on that better rights, better working conditions for non-exempt staff. And non-exempt staff on the University of Maryland's campus is comprised of everyone from facility workers, housekeeping staff, custodial staff, and so forth, landscaping staff. And so we presented that to him on that day, the 23rd of 2010, November 23rd, 2010. Then we invited him to our February 22nd, 2011 general body meeting where he came. And at that time, there were some workers that actually got on the microphone and started to mention things that they felt were unfair work conditions and discriminatory practices that were being levied towards them. I don't know if you had a question.
Can you recall some of the most egregious things that you heard from workers?
Not at that. It wasn't at that first meeting on the 22nd of February 2011. But when we first had our first forum, which was in May, the first forum was the 26th. The most egregious allegations, complaints that were levied were sexual abuse. Women And I'm not talking about sexual harassment. I'm talking about sexual abuse. Women being fondled, having their shirts being attempted to be removed in the middle of hallways and dormitories and so forth. This is what happened. And so every subsequent forum that we've had, we have had new women step forward and have and issue these allegations. So I would say those are the worst allegations, the sexual abuse. Allegations are the worst by far, but quite frankly, there's myriad more egregious complaints and allegations that have been levied by other workers as well.
With that said, you also mentioned before the show started that there is going to be some upcoming events in regards to people who are speaking out in regards to this. Can you tell us a little bit about anything that's upcoming in regards to people speaking out?
Most certainly. On August 18th, the Coalition for Workers' Rights, which is a solidarity movement and coalition of members of the campus community, that's students, Black faculty and staff association members, grad students, workers, you name it, we're going to be having there's a press conference that's going to be held in the Nimburu Cultural Center, and that will be August 18th at 6 p.m., from 6 to 8 p.m., on August 18th at the Nimburu Cultural Center, which is on the campus of University of Maryland, directly to the right of the Stamp Student Union, which is kind of like the main hub on campus for students and generates probably the most foot traffic.
Thank you. And before we go into Nnedi Alfaro after the break, I want to ask you, what has been the response of the University of Maryland or of the president, Wallace Lowe, about this issue?
Well, when we had our second meeting with Dr. Lowe, that was the 27th. On the 27th of 2011, and I have to say, the report in which that has a chronological timeline of all these events and has all the allegations that, or many of the allegations that have been put forth, is on our website, bfsa.umd.edu. We delivered a 56-page report to the president of the University of Maryland on May 27th. And on May 27th, we gave him that report. And at the time, he said that it was horrible, and that as a former prosecutor, if the allegations of sexual abuse are true, then these are not just fireable, but these are allegations where the police should be brought in. He then went on a trip to China for a couple of weeks, and when he came back, we heard nothing from him or his administration. I sent out a couple of emails, as did Dr. Ronald Ziegler, who was our senior advisor, and basically the response that we had gotten from his chief of staff was that they were looking into it. They were looking to form a committee of folks on campus, and it was just left at that. And that was about a month later, a month and a half later. Still nothing tangible coming from the University of Maryland's upper administration whatsoever. And it hasn't been since. The reason why now there's somewhat of a response, there was a memorandum that was sent out on the 26th of July, this was just this past week, by the provost of the University of Maryland, and basically outlines that they're forming a statewide investigation that involves some representatives from Towson University and another school, and then also a couple of folks from the University of Maryland, and that they're going to be looking into this. And the memorandum, you know, I have, and it will soon be uploaded, I believe. But that's where we are right now. So to answer your question, nothing strong, because, and I'll say this, that far be it from me to tell somebody how to do their job, but if I'm in that seat of power, and I get this 56-page report, I want to do something immediately. And I'm talking about this memorandum could have been sent out a week later, 2 weeks later. They're that widespread, and they're that reprehensible in terms of the allegations and the complaints and things that have been going on this campus.
We also have with us Andrea Zamudio here with us. She's a University of Maryland alumni who's also been helping organize the workers in filing this formal grievance towards the campus. And she's also been gracious enough to interpret for our other guest, Nettie Alfaro, this evening. So before we actually begin interpretation, can you tell us a little bit more about the work you've been doing in regards to organizing the workers in this situation? And what stories have you heard in particular while you've been doing this?
So I'm right now working on a workers' committee, particularly with the Spanish-speaking workers. We're trying to organize a committee where they can take initiative on what they want to see from the students, from the alumni, as well as just the coalition in general, which includes the BFSA. And I don't want to give too many details in terms of how we're organizing yet because it's still in the works. But the idea is to have this issue is about the workers, and so for it to be worker-centered. Some of the more dramatic stories that I've heard have been of women. I haven't because it's been really difficult to stay in contact with them. They've been really intimidated in terms of speaking out because of the university. And so it's been a little difficult to, reach out and work with, develop some kind of consistency in working with them. But other situations that I've heard of verbal abuse, keys being thrown on the ground, being called derogatory terms, the B word, just being yelled at in general. And we'll get into Nettie's case in specific, but that type of thing, just being called, just derogatory terms, yelled at.
And I wanted to add to that, the reason why I'm so passionate about this right now and so many other folks on campus are passionate about this, students as well as members of BFSA, Andrea, is that a human being that has like a soul can only take so much. And when I started to have this procession of women that quite frankly were as old as my mother is coming into my office and closing the door and breaking down and crying and talking about the sexual abuse that's been levied towards them, Latina women saying that keys were thrown on the ground and they were told to pick them up, you immigrant, pick them up. What are you? You need to be speaking English here. These type of things. I've spoken to a woman who was hurt on the job and she was asked if she could go to the on-campus infirmary, the health center, and was denied that. I saw her a week later and she was limping and she came and I went to try to speak to her and she was very reticent to speak to me and she pointed around the corner and said that she would come into my office. And when later she came to my office, she said, I've been dissuaded because the Black faculty and staff is seen as this, rabble-rouser organization that I was told that if I was caught talking to you or other members of BFSA, then there would be more retaliation to be levied towards me. And that's exactly what's happened to a lot of women on campus, Latina women primarily being sent to other zones and being ostracized.
And we will definitely follow up with the University of Maryland immediately tomorrow to get the president, Wallace Lowe, to get a statement from them about this issue. We will definitely continue to do an investigative report on this. Oscar.
That's right. With that said, we're speaking with Solomon Comasieng, the president of the Black Faculty and Staff Association at the University of Maryland, also with Jack Eisen, Andrea Zamudio, and Nettie Alfaro. We're going to take a short break right here. This is the Latino Media Collective. Back with more in a minute. Stay tuned.
Every day we are committed to bringing you a quality experience that is only found here on your station, WPFW. Because we are beholden to the members of this public radio station, WPFW can air content that is unlikely to be heard elsewhere. Member support is our largest and most reliable source of funding. That's why we are counting on you right now to fulfill your pledge if you have not already done so. Simply return the yellow envelope to us in the mail, or you can visit us online anytime at wpfw.org. Make sure the music and information that you love is here for you to listen to every day. Thanks again for making WPFW your station, your world.
I'm slaving every day for my living, slaving so hard. I'm working every day in the cold mine, working so hard. Oh, 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 oh.
This is Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, reminding everyone that you can also hear live online at WPFW.org. That's WPFW.org. You can also listen to some of our previous shows at DC.inimedia.org. That's DC.inimedia.org. And you can also find the Latino Media Collective on Facebook.com as well. If you have any questions this evening for any of our guests this evening, you can give us a call online. We are taking up phone calls. Number is 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. I want to go now to one of our guests, Nery Alfaro, who's actually a housekeeper at the University of Maryland College Park. Again, Andrea Zamudio is going to interpret for us. Señora Alfaro, bienvenidos al programa. ¿Nos puedes decir un poco sobre su trabajo? ¿Cuándo empezaste? ¿Y cuál es la situación que tienes en la Universidad de Maryland?
Sí, buenas noches. Empecé en el 2007 y tuve un tuve problemas en el 2008.
Good afternoon. My name is Nery Alfaro. I started in 2007 and I started having problems in 2008.
En marzo del 2008 yo puse un complaint de alergia.
In March of 2008, I put a complaint in because I had for an allergy that I was having.
Y como es que la supervisora de housekeeper me dijo, o sea, yo fui al doctor y el doctor me dio un papel donde explicaba que me hacía daño donde sea la tiza donde yo estaba trabajando, y ella lo que dijo que por qué no había comprado unas gotas, que por qué había ido al doctor.
So I went to the doctor because I was having an allergic reaction to the chalk. And when I came back to speak to my supervisor regarding what the doctor had said, she told me that why did I go to the doctor? Why didn't I just get drops from the store?
Entonces yo le dije, yo fui al doctor porque yo no podía recetarme unas gotas que yo no sabía que me iban a caer bien en mis ojos.
And so I told her that I went to the doctor because I couldn't diagnose myself for something that I didn't know what I had.
Y ella me dijo, pues es tu trabajo, tú tienes que desempeñarlo.
And so she
sea
said that,
como sea.
And so she said, this is the work that you do, so you have to do this work in whichever way you have to get it done.
Entonces, yo, o sea, puse complaint a recursos humanos porque el señor José prácticamente me dijo, tú si no desempeñas el trabajo tú estás fuera de la universidad, porque en la universidad tienen en todos los buildings tienen tiza.
And so one of the supervisors, Jose, told her that she had to do her job if she, you know, because there's chalk in every part of the university. And so if she didn't do her job, she would have to leave the university.
Y me recetaron la o sea, me el recursos humanos me mandó que me hiciera un examen en la clínica. Y de para la una máscara. Bueno, después de esa máscara, yo entré, me pasaron a trabajar con la supervisora que entré de primera a trabajar, que allí no había tiza.
And so the Human Resources Department sent me to get a mask fitted, and in the meantime, they sent me back to work with my original team leader because there was no chalk in that area.
Entonces, ahí fue donde ellas me atacaron por la queja que yo puse. Me atacaron de esta forma. Me mandaban a hacer dos dos assignments de 8 horas. Cada building, 8 horas.
And so that's when I was moved to the next building, is when I was attacked by the team leaders and the supervisors. I was given 2 assignments, so the amount of work that for 2 people. So each building would be 8 hours. I was getting two buildings to do in 8 hours.
Después, ella me decía, ella me iba a dejar. Me decía la supervisor, la team leader, me decía, ya me voy. Cuando menos acordaba, me gritaba por detrás y no building solo. Yo estaba con un gran estrés. Entonces, puse un complaint con Gloria Aparicio. O sea, alguien me dio, porque me vio sufrir a esa persona. Me dijo, te voy a dar este número. Y me dijo, Gloria Aparicio, yo voy a hablar con los jefes grandes. Los jefes grandes hablaron con la supervisora. La supervisora me mandó a llamar de donde yo estaba trabajando.
And so, working with this team leader, she would leave the building, tell me she was leaving, and then she would come back and yell at me. She was scaring me. And so I started to feel anxious and was constantly on edge. And so one of my coworkers who saw me going through the situation gave me the contact information for Gloria Aparicio. I gave her a call and told her my situation. And she said that she would speak to the managers to see what they could do.
Después de esto, yo llegué a la oficina donde estaba la supervisora y estaban todas ellas, las team leader. Y me preguntaron qué pasaba. Yo les dije, les expliqué, ella me han dado hostigando todo este tiempo después de que he puesto este complaint.
So a week later, I was called into my supervisor's office, and I met with her and the other team leaders, and she asked me what was going on. I told her that I was being instigated right after I had put in this complaint for the allergy.
Y ella, ¿qué lo que hicieron? Se pusieron a reír entre todas. Se miraban las caras y se reían.
And so they said they just started looking at each other and laughing at each other while I was telling what my situation was.
Después de esto, yo 2 semanas después entró la máscara, o sea, ya llegó la máscara. Ya después entré yo a trabajar al mismo lugar donde había salido, porque no había llegado la máscara. El primer día que yo entré a trabajar con la máscara, hice el BASMA. Después llegué al G. En el G terminé, sentía que me ahogaba. Y sentía que no podía respirar.
And so then two weeks later, the mask came in and I was moved back to the building where I was having the allergic reaction. I wore the mask the first day and I was cleaning the basement. Then I moved to the main floor and I felt like I couldn't breathe when I was wearing the mask.
Entonces ya llamé a mi team leader y ella me dijo, ¿qué pasa? Cuando esto pasó, andaban primero ellas, dos. Las dos me dijeron, tú no tienes que quitarte la máscara. Tiene que andar en todas las áreas, tienes que andarla puesta siempre.
And so I called my team leader to tell her that I was having a problem breathing with a mask. And so they just told me, two of the team leaders told me that I just needed to keep the mask on the entire time, that I wasn't supposed to take it off at all.
Mi respuesta fue, yo no puedo porque no puedo andar mucho tiempo con la máscara puesta. No puedo, no respiro bien. No puedo, no tengo mucha respiración buena porque acabo... O sea, tengo un estrés tremendo. Esa fue mi respuesta.
And so,
eso no es problema de nosotros.
And so I responded that I couldn't stand wearing the mask because I couldn't breathe. And it just wasn't something that was helping me. I had to take it off so that I could breathe okay. And their response was that it wasn't their problem.
Entonces, cuando yo sentí el dolor en el pecho y que no podía respirar, yo llamé al Latin Leader y me dijo, ¿qué pasa? Yo no aguanto, tengo un dolor en el pecho, no puedo respirar. Y ella me dijo, deja eso ahí y vete para allá a sentarte un rato. ¿Tú quieres ir a Health Center? Y mi respuesta fue, esto no es de Health Center, yo no voy a estar esperando hasta las 8 de la mañana.
And so then when I couldn't stand it anymore, when I had a pain in my chest that I couldn't stand anymore, I called the team leader, and she told me to you know, leave my work aside and just sit down. And she asked me if I wanted to go to the health center, and I told her that I couldn't wait until the next day to go to the health center, that this was something that was serious and I needed to do something about it now.
Entonces ellas no hicieron, o sea, no hacían nada. Se miraban entre ellas, se reían. Yo las miraba que se reían y hablaban en inglés. Como yo no entiendo mucho inglés, no entiendo casi nada. Y ellas se reían y se reían. Y yo allí que no podía respirar, que nada, y una de ellas me auxilió.
And so the team leaders just stood by talking to each other, looking at me, laughing, speaking in English, and I don't understand English very well. And so they weren't trying to help me at all. They were making fun of me. One of the team leaders did come to help me out.
Después pasó hasta la media hora, llamaron a la de emergencia, porque les dije yo no aguanto, yo ya no puedo respirar. Y ellas, hasta después de media hora que pasó, que yo les dije que no podía respirar, llamaron a emergencia. Y llegaron los de la ambulancia, me pusieron el oxígeno. Y vinieron ellas, me montaron a la ambulancia y se quedaban riendo. Cuando yo partía, yo las quedé viendo y se quedaban riendo.
And so then half an hour later, they finally called the ambulance, but they waited half an hour afterwards, after I had told them that I initially needed to go to the emergency room. And when they put me in the ambulance, I could see them just looking at me, and they started to laugh at me as the ambulance drove away.
It is very important to know that the women who have been victims of these abuses are not they are direct employees of the University of Maryland. If you want to contact, you know, there's a lot of alumni in the region. And so we're going to give out the phone number of the University of Maryland to give a call to the president of the university, Wallace Lowe, or to Ann G. Wiley, Senior Vice President and Provost. And the phone number is 301-405-5252. 301-405-5252. And we would like also to hear from those that are listening to us who have some sort of connection to the University of Maryland. Oscar, where can they call us?
Yes, the studio number right now, if you have any questions or comments, is 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. You know what? We're going to take a real, real, real short break right now to take stock of everything we just heard. This is the Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM. Again, the number is 202-588-0893. That's 202-588-0893. Back with more in a second. Stay tuned. This is Latino Media Collective here on WPFW 89.3 FM, talking with workers in regards to labor abuses at the University of Maryland College Park campus. We have a couple phone calls right now, so we have one caller on the line. Caller, can you hear us?
Yes, I can.
All right, we're pretty short, cutting it short time. So do you have a quick question or comment that you want to address?
I guess one of the comments is, you know, I'll be brief so other folks can speak up. My name is Abe Goodwin. I work in facilities and, you know, I'm one of the people that's been abused and you know, racially discriminated against. And, you know, today, I mean, I initially filed my complaint, you know, almost 2 years ago. And today, nothing has happened. And also, I'm continually harassed. But the one thing I'm not going to do is quit. I'm going to stand up. I'm going to, you know, fight however I can. But the key is to let people know what's going on at the university.
Thank you very much, caller. Thank you very much for calling us at this time. I believe we have another caller on the line. Caller, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you. How are you doing this evening?
Doing good. Do you have a short question or comment that you want to add?
Yeah, this is Nightwolf. You know, I can remember the history of Maryland University back in the 60s and 70s when Paris Clendenning, the former county executive of PG County, was in charge of the university and how he discriminated against blacks. And it's really crazy how those that have been the victims have turned the tables to become the victimizers against Latino people. And I just want to say one thing, that Latino people are Indian people. They are Indians from the Americas. They're my people. And I really think that, you know, those that are discriminating against these people and treating them like this, they need to be called down and brought into a public forum. And I'm saying this because I think WPFW should be standing behind this effort to bring justice to the Latino people at Maryland University.
Thank you very much, Nightfloat, for calling us.
You're welcome.
So it looks like the phones are ringing off the
we
hook.
Need to be called down.
So
and
before we try to get another caller on the line, we're going to try to continue right now with Nettie Alfaro to see if it's possible you can continue where you left off before we took a break. Si es posible, pues a continuar donde dejaste antes que tomamos una pausa breve.
Sí, después de eso, salí del, o sea, no llamaron a mi familia, no llamaron a mi esposo. Supuestamente uno da un número de emergencia para que le llamen a la familia cuando uno está en el hospital.
And so after I was sent off in the ambulance, they never called my family. Supposedly, we give emergency contact numbers so that when, in case of an emergency, they'll call your family when something happens, but that didn't occur.
Me dejaron sola. Yo salí del hospital bien, como le ponen medicina. Salí como media moribunda, caminando. Salí y le dije, le hablé a mi hermano, porque ese día mi hermano no trabajó, por dicha que no trabajó él, y me vino a traer él. Y me regresé al parqueo a traer mi carro. Manejé así, manejando bien mal.
And so they left me alone in the hospital. I left the hospital half, unconscious because I had been drugged at the hospital, and that I had to call my brother, but I had to drive from the hospital or from the university first, and it was an awful experience.
Ellos no hicieron nada. Después, la doctora me dio restricción a no fecha, no límite de no regresar, no me dio fecha para hacerme exámenes en los pulmones.
And so the doctor gave me an excuse from work without any definite time so that I could get exams done.
Entonces me hicieron los exámenes y me dijeron que yo tenía asma. Y dije yo, no, asma, yo nunca había padecido de asma. Y me dijo la doctora, sí, me dijo, tú tenías asma, pero la tenías dormida y se te despertó con el, con lo que usted, tú estás usando, me dice, con porque yo le expliqué qué era el trabajo que yo desempeñaba.
And so I got the results back saying that I had asthma. And I told her that I had never had asthma before. But she said that because of the situation that I was in and the conditions that I was working under, my asthma had been exacerbated.
I believe we have one more caller on the line. Caller, can you hear us? Caller, can you hear us? Well, we've had several phone calls this evening, so before we continue, I will say thank you very much for everyone that's been calling. Let me go real quickly. Do we got him back on? No, not yet. Caller, can you hear us? Nope, deadline. All right, real quickly, Jack Eisen, with what you just heard real quickly, because we have about 7 minutes left, you've heard some of her testimony, and, you know, that's one thing that really brought to my attention was the issue of shifts, and particularly in retaliation, because, you know, this has been absolutely tremendous what she's mentioned.
Yeah, I mean, I think if the university took this seriously, more than anything else, they should be stopping retaliations immediately. Because the first thing that they need to know if they're going to do anything is what's happening, and if people are afraid to speak up, then we can't know what's going on. And so, I mean, it seems clear that the university isn't doing that, and so one thing students are doing in the short term is we're organizing to fight retaliations directly. Housekeepers are on shift from 4 a.m. to 12 p.m. They're alone on campus, they're isolated, and that's where managers can get at them. That's where the cruelty happens. And so students are walking in the morning on shift, we're watching the managers, we're saying, look, we're here, you can't get away with this, and we're trying to build connections with workers. We're saying, look, there's students here, we care about what's going on, and we stand with you. So if you need help, please reach out.
We also have with us in the studio Aaron Montenegro, who's an undergraduate student at American University and who's also been working in this as well. Can you tell us a little bit about, first of all, what you have heard and, you know, some of the details of the work that you've been doing?
Yes. Unfortunately, this happens across the board at many campuses, many universities. This is an industry based on abuse and exploitation. At American University, they're strikingly in similar cases over there, but in a different context, in which the housekeeping department is subcontracted by an outside organization. And this is just a general move against workers, attacking immigrants. And so this campaign is more of a campaign for respect, a campaign for dignity and human rights. So it's true that workers, you know, should not have any fear, you know, que no tengan miedo, que there's a coalition, a broad coalition of students, community members, faculty, everybody, we're with you. So,
thank you very much. I think we got the caller back online. Caller, can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you now.
We have about 2 minutes left. Do you have a short question or comment that you want to add?
No, I just want to say that I used to go to UMD before, and this has been going on for a few years now, where, you know, the people working in the housekeeping department are mistreated and are not being respected, and, you know, they don't appreciate what they're doing. You know, like, I used to see, like, the team leaders, you know, abusing the employees regularly, not just, you know, every now and then, but, you know, on a constant basis. You know, treating them with no respect, you know, yelling at them, and, you know, doing a lot of bad things to them.
Thank you very much for your call, and remember that this case is building up, and if you've been there, you've been a witness of what's happening, has been happening at the University of Maryland, you can contact BFSA president. You can contact him at 301-314-8439 or give us a call here at the Latino Media Collective every Wednesday. You can also email solomon@umd.edu, and once again, the phone number for the University of Maryland, if you want to give him your opinion about what's happening, is 301-405-5252, and you can give a call to N.G. Wiley, Senior Vice President and Provost, or also call the President Wallace Lowe. And Oscar, I believe we are going to ask for closing remarks.
Yes, real quickly, because we got about 2 minutes left. Andrea Zamudio, is there anything you'd like to add before we wrap it up this evening?
I just want to say that, like Aaron mentioned, this is a human rights issue, and so it should be taken that seriously. People shouldn't have to work under these conditions. They're obviously not humane, and so, you know, we should take this as something very serious and attack it as such.
Professor Solomon, can you give us the website for people who want to know more about this, or any other upcoming events, any actions as well that we need to be aware of?
Right. Once again, a great website to see the demands and recommendations that BFSA has put forth, because we issued recommendations/demands back on the 27th of May. And they're, quite frankly, recommendations that the university, if they wanted to, could implement yesterday if they wanted to. They could have implemented them months ago. You can go to bfsa.umd.edu to see the complete report there. But you can also go to, if you want to see a number of the interviews like the one we're having right now, we've done a series called Invisible Voices, as well as video footage from the last forum. You can go to www.umdcampusjustice.wordpress.com. That's umdcampusjustice.wordpress.com. And like I said, like she said before, you can contact me at 301-314-8439 to find out how you can get involved. We need more and more people to get involved. And I'll just end on this. As Dr. King said a long, long time ago, our lives begin to end the moment that we remain silent about things that matter. This matters. This is racial discrimination on so many different levels. It's sexism on so many different levels. It's justice that we need to work together to end this madness.
Thank you very much. Y el último, para cerrar el show, señora Nery Alfaro, el último comentario que usted quiera decir a los que nos escuchan. Your last comments, Ms. Nery Alfaro, for those who are listening today.
Sí, mi último comentario es para todas las housekeepers que no tengan miedo, que hablen, porque yo he sido la única de mi zona que he hablado. Que hablen, porque se han cometido muchas injusticias.
And so my last comment is to the housekeepers at the University of Maryland to speak out, because I have been the only person in my zone to speak out. And it's important that we have our stories told, because so many abuses have been committed against us.
And with that said, thank you very much, each and every one of you, for being on the show with us. We're pretty short on time right now, so I want to thank real quickly The show was produced by Janet Hernandez, Andrea Mesa, Maria Luz Castro Johnson, Roberto Martinez, Juan Ortiz, Michelle Christmas, Angel 22, and engineered by Abigail Roberts. And a very special thank you to Andrea Zamudio for helping us out for this show this evening. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening. Thank you very much for all the University of Maryland alums that called this evening as well. That is it for tonight's show. Now stay tuned for Evening Jazz with Miss Ellen Carter. Thank you very much for listening. Adios. Nos vemos. Ciao.
Por favor, no llores. Lo siento.